Food and travel. They go hand in hand. And chances are, if you're a fan of Heritage Radio Network, you love them both. Between April 10th and 24th, we have 6 incredible food and travel experiences up for auction at charitybuzz.com. Go on an underground food tour of New Orleans with a rocket scientist. Get your hands on VIP passes to Feast Portland, or enjoy a ranch-to-table experience in wine country. 4 of the experiences include hotel stays at some of the most iconic properties across the country, including the newly reopened Hotel Claremont in Atlanta. Now's your chance to win the ultimate Bourbon and Beyond weekend in Lexington, or take in a Latin food tour of New York's outer boroughs. You'll eat, drink, explore, and relax, all while supporting Heritage Radio Network. Help us keep the lights on and the mics hot. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/auction and bid now.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. Thank you to everyone who came to Jubilee on Saturday. It was our biggest and best Jubilee yet, with more than 700 women in attendance, if you can believe that. Thank you to everyone who made it possible, from our volunteers to our speakers, chefs and sponsors and attendees, everybody. All of you are the bomb. If you missed Jubilee, don't be too sad. We recorded all the talks and we'll be airing them in the weeks ahead. Let's thank today's sponsors. If you're daydreaming about culinary school, maybe it's time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplôme, by visiting cordonbleu.edu. Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland. If you love beautiful Swiss cheeses, look for Emmy's premier Kalt Bock label and cheeses such as Emmentaler, Gruyere, Le Cremeux, and Le Cremeux, aged in the 22-million-year-old Kalt Bock cave for superior flavor, unlike anywhere else in the world. I want to see that cave. Bob's Red Mill. Bob's Red Mill is an employee-owned company that has been offering organic, gluten-free, and stone-ground products for decades. With Bob's Red Mill, you're not just getting quality, you're getting flavor-packed food that tastes amazing. Visit bobsredmill.com today. All right, now let's talk about today's guest. Ruthie Rogers is one of the most acclaimed and respected chefs on the planet. In 1987, she and her friend and business partner, Rose Gray, opened the River Cafe in what, at the time, was an unfashionable part of London. Today, it is a much-loved restaurant known for its dedication to simple, authentic Italian food. At the same time, Chef Ruth is also dedicated to having a humane workplace where everyone is treated fairly and as an individual. She is with us today on the line to reflect on 30 years of love, family, and delicious food, and she's going to tell us about her beautiful new cookbook, which each of you needs for your cookbook collection. Chef Ruthie Rogers, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
We are thrilled to talk to you. It's not every day we have a real icon on Radio Cherry Bomb. So,
it's not every day I get to be interviewed by someone who's done so much for food and cooking for women. It's very exhilarating. Thank you.
That's very sweet of you to say. We're going to jump right into this because I have so many questions for you.
Okay.
And what was your restaurant experience before opening the River Cafe?
Well, I had quite a lot of restaurant experience, but it was always as a diner, an eater, because I think I was about 16, I worked in a small restaurant as a waiter. So I really came cold into the world of restaurants, and my partner, Rose, had a tiny bit more because she helped a friend of hers, Nell, in the early 80s open a place here called Nell's. But we were both... You know, we discovered the site. We right away knew that we wanted to do it together. So we were, although we had very little experience, we had great ambition.
That blows my mind. I mean, I've been lucky enough to eat at the River Cafe once when I was in London last summer. But I can't even fathom that you weren't a chef in a restaurant before you opened the River Cafe.
Well, I think the thing about it, I always say, is that we started so small. We started small and we started with restrictions. And I think as much as we all rebel against restrictions, they enabled us to, as I always say, grow with the restaurant.
So what were some of those restrictions in the early days?
Okay, so first of all, we were only allowed, we found the site of the River Cafe was in a pair, in a sort of group of warehouses that had been turned into a community of architects and designers and picture framers, and it was on the banks of the Thames, and there was a small space, and it was my husband who's an architect. We'd just come back from Paris where he was designing the Pompidou, and they wanted to have a community, and there was always the idea that there would be a place to eat. So Rose and I, in a moment of kind of whatever, said, we'll do it. And the restrictions were, because it was in a residential area, that we could only be open at lunchtime, and we could only be open to the people who worked in the community. So that's where the idea of the River Cafe as a staff canteen. We never wanted to be a staff canteen, but that's really how it started.
You had bigger aspirations.
I think we always did. Yeah, I think even from the moment we started, we didn't want to be bigger, but we wanted to be the best. We wanted to do the kind of cooking that we'd eaten and cooked in Italy. Both of us were joined by a kind of passion and interest in Italian food.
I read in an interview that you said back in those days you were scarily confident.
Yeah, I think we did. I mean, you know, I think we just thought, we can do this, you know, we can do it. And, you know, just, we did.
30 years later, you did.
Maybe we did, yeah.
I also read that you did not make any money in the first 4 years. Is that true?
Well, with those restrictions, you know, it was very hard to be small. And then we had to be we were competing with, not with other restaurants, but with literally the woman who came and sold sandwiches to the workers in the community. So we were, you know, we had to be very low priced. We were very small, and we had only opened for restricted hours. So if you put that together as a package, it's not the best business plan. but we did have a very rigorous control. So we eked it out. We did lose money for the first 4 years, but luckily, we kind of supported it.
What made you stay at it and stay with it?
We just thought we were the luckiest people in the world, you know, to be cooking the food that we love, to be, you know, either you just love feeding people and being a public space and having people come in, and or you don't. And if you do, then having a restaurant is the best job in the world.
Ruthie, did you have mentors or advisors back then?
Yeah, I think we had advisors were, you know, when I went into the restaurant world, everybody always said it's very competitive, it's very cutthroat. And I think people just thought these two women starting a restaurant, you know, hard in an area that's kind of hard to get to, we better help them out. And I mean, some people didn't, but you know, Jeremy King, who had the Caprice and the Ivy at that time, Simon Hopkinson, who had just started doing his restaurant Bibendum, Rowley Lee, who was at Kensington Place, Sally Clark, we all kind of in it together. And some of the old school were not very nice, but mostly people were incredibly kind.
And I guess you had some spiritual advisors. I read something where you said that Julia Child is the person who gave you confidence.
Yeah, I mean, I think in cooking that Julia Child, you know, I grew up with Julia Child. I always say Rose grew up with Elizabeth David, and I grew up with Julia Child. It was a good combination because I say Julia Child, as a home cook, if you followed her recipes, you rarely had a failure because it was like reading a science textbook. But it meant that it gave you confidence, and then you had that basis. And then Elizabeth David was all about ingredients and a juicy tomato and put it in the pan with some garlic and some, you know, where Julia would say a quarter of a tablespoon. Elizabeth David would use the adjective thumb. So it was just a combination. And I think, yeah, I think my, you know, my my mother-in-law was an excellent cook. We were surrounded by great cooks, but running a restaurant is a different story, isn't it?
You know? Absolutely. For those who haven't been lucky enough to eat at the River Cafe, can you walk us through what the space is like?
Yeah, I think from the very beginning, Rose and I wanted a space that was kind of the way we cooked in our homes, and we both had open kitchens. We both had kind of involvement of all the our family in the food. And so when we, even in the early days, you walked through the kitchen to get to the restaurant because it was so small. And now you enter and I think it's an industrial space with windows overlooking the green space and then the River Thames. And then you walk in, and I think it's quite a dramatic room in the sense it's quite simple. You know, we have a very bright blue carpet. We have a wood oven at the end with always a fire burning, and it's a wood oven that is a kind of traditional woman wood oven, but we painted it shocking pink. There's light. There's reflection from the windows on the street side, I think it's a very high ceilinged, and there's a long stainless steel bar, and we always sort of, we love working along a long bar. So you have, you know, at one end you have the drinks, and then you go into the coffee, then you go into the desserts, then you go into the salads, and then you come to the part where you're getting into the heat of the kitchen, you have the grill. And on top of the bar, you know how when you walk into a restaurant in Italy, especially in Rome, you walk into a table of vegetables? Well, we do that. We have all the vegetables that we've been cooking. And so...
And since you mentioned those vegetables, how about the menu? I know your menu changes twice a day, right?
Yeah, so we've always, from the very beginning, worked on the basis that, you know, we would write the menu for each meal. So, there's the hub is the kind of black book, and in there, the if you were coming in the morning, I go in and I look at three things. I look at what's been ordered the night before. At fish, meat, vegetables, and I look at the team I have working it with me. So I look at the rota and see who's on, and then I look in the cold store and see what vegetables we have in boxes and in the meat. So, and then I look in the fridge to see if there are some sauces. There might be a slow-cooked tomato sauce. There might be borlotti beans that are there. So I know what I have, and then I sit down and I think, you know, what would I want to eat? Or if I look at the team, what would be a good thing that they'd be good at cooking? And then I look outside and I see the weather, and then we sit down and write the menu. It's not quite as freeform as that, because we always have six starters, four pastas, and three fish and three meat.
Are there things that you just can't take off the menu?
Yes. I think if somebody walked in, and we've had it sometimes, and we didn't have grilled squid with chili and rocket, which has probably been over there. If we didn't have the caramel ice cream and the nemesis, we always have. We always like to have mozzarella. We like to have a, there's a kind of rhythm to it. So we have salumi, a prosciutto, or sometimes carpaccio, sometimes carne crudo, and then we have vegetables. Depends what's in season.
The nemesis you mentioned, that's your famous chocolate cake. What kind of cake
Yes.
is that?
It's basically a very dark, flourless cake that it's not thin, and you know, a lot of flourless cakes can be, because they can be quite thin and dense. The nemesis is you beat the egg yolks and the sugar for a very, very, very long time, and then you know you add the chocolate. So it's almost like it rises and then it sinks. So it's very rich, but it's very delicious.
So it requires a real level of skill on the part of your team to keep with that and be able to go with a menu that changes twice a day. You've said that everyone is treated as an individual and as family, but the environment is demanding. And I was curious, how do you balance being a demanding boss but a humane one?
I think that I think they you know, they go together. I think should I be nice or should I be demanding? I think that you know, we're all striving to go to work and cook well, the best we can. And it's a small team, and we teach and we work together. And when you first, you know, work in the River Cafe, you you know, we've had people who just, you know, blanch vegetables, but you learn how to blanch. You learn how to make a slow-cooked tomato sauce. You learn how to do the very basics. And then very slowly you graduate. And then we work, you know, we work together. So I might have a chef that might teach me something. You know, they might make an artichoke risotto that's so good. Because they, you know, we allow people to, you know, as you say, to be the individual, but it's under huge rigor, I would say. You know, we work together in a small team. We don't just say, go and make the salsa verde for a very long time.
Now, a lot of, as you know, kitchens and restaurants are rethinking how they run things, from, you know, staff training to hiring practices in light of the Me Too movement. And I was curious how it's impacted the River Cafe.
Well, I'd like to think that, you know, a restaurant run by two women, and a restaurant that has had, you know, such a kind of available ethos about the way, you know, we work, in terms of everybody has to have 2 days a week off. If you do a double, then you don't do the next morning. You know, we give everyone good food to eat. We don't buy in cheap food for them. And so all that is integral to creating an environment where people want to come to work, where they feel, you know, they're working hard, but, you know, and they have to work hard, but we all do. The fact that I go in every day means that I want to be there. And if I want to be there, then I hope they'll want to be there. But I think that everybody has had to, you know, be aware that we have to be careful. We have to be more sensitive and more aware. As I said, you know, to what somebody's, one person might think of as a hug, somebody might think of as intrusion into their space. So we are much more aware of it now, and I think it's good.
Has it rocked the London scene the same way it has here in New York and other cities?
No, I don't think so. And I don't know how, you know, I think, well, it has in terms of, you know, all different aspects of life. But I think that, you know, it's there. But I think that, you know, it's good. I mean, I think it's, but it is, you know, we are at a time when everybody is just thinking about respect. But it's the same thing with physical. You know, I once had a woman chef, and she said she was working in a kitchen in London, and the head chef stood over her. She was taking souffles out of the oven, and he stood over with a frying pan, and he said, "If these souffles don't come out correctly, this frying pan will be on your head." Of course, I don't think, you know, it's a threat. But I said, what you should have done is put the souffles back in the oven, gotten, you know, your clothes, and gone out the door to the police. You know, but to the police, because this is abuse, this is threatening, this is, and the idea that somehow chefs can be like that and it's okay. I really try to bring back over and over again, being a chef to being the same as what you do, you know, an editor of a magazine or a journalist or an architect. We have a stressful career and a job, but no more than, you know, a lawyer trying a case. Everything is that way. And so we have to attract young chefs into the workplace. We can't be old-fashioned.
Exactly. And, you know, it's when you think about you and Rose, and you've been such a shining example for so long, but yet it really took a long time for women in this industry to kind of get their due. How did you two do it? You know, there weren't a lot of role models for you in terms of what you were doing in the restaurant.
Well, I think we were older. So, you know, I was 38 and Rose was 48 when we started the River Cafe, or I can't remember, something like that. And I think that we'd had a lot of children and between us. And I think that, you know, it is... it was just a process of fighting for what we believed and carrying on our ethos. And we were small and we were determined. And I think it was a culture of, you know, we also had the culture of, when I first started, I remember the first day I got to the River Cafe, I called up London Linen, and I said, I can't wear these trousers. They're so uncomfortable. And she said, Ruthie, 99% of the chefs who wear those trousers are men. So they're designed for men, so just deal with it. And I think that, you know, that's changed brilliantly. You know, it's just so good the way it's changed.
Exactly. There's a fun friend of ours who's based in London who does that line now called Polka Pants.
I know. I'm so excited to see them at the festival.
Yes.
I was amazed that she was in London. We were saying, where can we get these trousers? And she said, actually, I'm in London.
Right in your backyard. I see a future collaboration because you've got all those beautiful bright colors in the at the River Cafe. You know, you and Rose, you really planted so many seeds that I think are just sprouting so beautifully now. When you look around and you just see all these women in the food scene doing incredible things. I mean, I know you are absolutely not the kind of person who pats yourself on the back and says, "Oh, look, you know, look at this field of sunflowers. We're responsible for some of this." But you are. Do you ever look out at all these young women? You know, in New York, you've got the chefs at King. You've got so many incredible young women in London doing things. Does that make you happy to see this? Do you think of it as your legacy?
Nothing happier. You know, when a chef leaves the River Cafe, you know, you hope that you've really taught them not just how to, you know, make a risotto, but to take with them the values and the ethos and the care and the concern that we have. And when they leave, you want to say, you know, I always say, as long as you keep cooking, you know, please just keep cooking and keep, you know, whatever kind of food you cook or wherever you cook, you know, just please keep doing that. Because we spend so much time working with them. But then, you know, there's that great, you know, if you love them, let them go. And they go and they go and they you know, they're just, and then they come back. You know, it's so nice to see the chefs who've left, and then they come back to the River Cafe and tell their stories, or they come into the kitchen, or we work with them, or we, you know, and we've had actually some chefs who've left and said, you know what, it's really scary out there, and it's too much, and, you know, I just want to come home. And so that's also a possibility, isn't it?
You know? No. Well, Ruthie, we love you, but don't go. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Ruth Rogers, chef owner of the River Cafe London and author of the new cookbook celebrating the restaurant's 30 glorious years. It's time for a quick cheese lesson from our friends at Emmy, the makers of traditional, authentic, delicious cheeses from Switzerland. Why should you care about Gruyere? Emmy's special Kalt Bock Le Gruyere AOP is aged in their 22-million-year-old natural sandstone cave to allow flavors of dried stone fruit, spice, black tea, and hazelnut to develop and take on an earthy depth. The texture is a perfect mix of creamy with pronounced crystals that develop as the cheese ages. Whether you are snacking or party planning, serve your Kalt Bock Le Gruyere AOP with toasted pecans, cherry jam, or rustic bread, and pair it with some apple cider or a Cabernet Franc, red or white Burgundy, or single malt Scotch. Look for the red and blue Emmy logo at your favorite local grocer. It's time for our Bob's Red Mill baking break. Some of you know I have a coffee shop in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn called Smith Canteen. Well, we have a brilliant new baker, Gabby Vigoro, and she's been redoing our pastry and baked good offerings. And no surprise, she's been using a ton of Bob's Red Mill products because, as we all know, Bob's Red Mill is a baker's best friend. Gabby has just introduced this raspberry lemon oat scone that I'm obsessed with. To make it, she pulses Bob's Red Mill steel-cut oats in the food processor to make fresh oat flour. She adds this to her basic buttermilk scone recipe along with raspberries, lemon zest, and rolled oats. Just before they hit the oven, she sprinkles them with a bit of lemon sugar for crunch, and you guessed it, more oats. In this case, Bob's Red Mill rolled oats. The result? A scone that has an irresistible golden crust with tender, fluffy insides and warm, tangy red raspberries. I think I've eaten one every single day this week. With Bob's Red Mill, you're not just getting quality, you're getting flavor-packed food that tastes amazing. visit bobsredmill.com today. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques and cuisine and pâtisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. All right, Bomb Squad, we're back with Ruth Rogers, chef owner of the River Cafe and co-author of this beautiful new cookbook, River Cafe London. Ruth, I just opened the cookbook to, I just wanted to see randomly where it would land. And this is torturous because I'm really hungry. And it opened, it opened up to spaghetti with lemon, which is such a simple recipe. It's incredible. I don't know how you take these simple ingredients and spin them into the magic that you do at the River Cafe.
Well, I think it's really just, it is based on just ingredients. And if you have amazing, you know, lemons and it's just as a taste how you're going to bring that out. But there are also, a lot of our recipes are steeped in the history or the region of where we ate them, you know. So the going to Amalfi and having that pasta. Have you made it?
No, but I'm going to now.
Okay. We really tried in this book, you know, to give recipes, as you can see, that with not a lot of ingredients that are, you know, sometimes you want to spend a lot of time cooking and making something like the rotolo that's in the pasta section where you roll out a sheet of pasta and you make the spinach and the ricotta. And then other times you just come home and you just want to have a simple pasta or a grilled piece of fish. You know?
So tell us about the book. It's a combination of new recipes and classic recipes, right?
Yeah, so it really was a kind of birthday present, I suppose, to ourselves. The publisher who we've published, or Random House, our books with, said, you know, you're going to be 30. This was in January. What about doing revisiting? Is there a kind of idea? Revisiting the first book, the blue book, and looking at those recipes that you did 25 years ago and thinking which ones are relevant today, which ones need to be changed, which ones can stay the same, your favorite ones, give some hints. And then, you know, we didn't want to just look backwards. We wanted to look forward. So there's also 40 new recipes. And then also to tell the story of the restaurant, to tell how we started. I've written a tribute and piece about working and living with Rose Gray. And we also wanted a cookbook that would, you know, reflect the kind of joy of the River Cafe. The River Cafe is about bright colors. The River Cafe is about light. And so together with the designers, Anthony Michaels and Stephanie Nash, they found this beautiful font that was done by the artist Joseph Albers in the Bauhaus, and we used that as a kind of basis throughout the book to have bright colors and this rather beautiful font. We took all the photographs of the food outside in the sun, which was a challenge in Britain between January and June. But we went, you know, we would call Matthew Donaldson, our photographer, and say, get over here, the sun's out, make a 4 or 5 recipes, and then photograph them in the sun. So there's no styling, there was no unnatural light. And so I think there's a kind of honesty that says, we just cooked this recipe and now we're photographing it. And, carry on.
No, I was going to say, there's a real intimacy to the cookbook when you flip through it. I think because you've got so many of those great black and white photos, I felt like I was looking through as much of a family album as I was a cookbook.
Yeah, we also wanted to get that without being kind of sentimental. So Johnny Pagazzi, who's this just fantastic photographer who has actually worked on the first book with us, he just came and he just brings us camera and photographs the restaurant where, you know, as we're working, as we're doing the, when we want it to be quite active. There's one page which is, shows my children and grandchildren who just happened to be there that night, and he took photographs of them. He took photographs of the chef. So I think, but we wanted a kind of energy, because sometimes I kept thinking, well, if it wasn't my restaurant, would I be interested in seeing this photograph? But I really think it tells a story.
Johnny's a real character. That must have been fun working with him.
Yeah, he's great. He's absolutely great.
You probably don't.
And then the third element to the book is the menus by the artists. So I had, because I was friends with Ellsworth Kelly and with Cy Twombly, they both, eating in the River Cafe, had kind of, Cy just wrote a lovely, scribbled over a menu in his inevitable handwriting, and Ellsworth Kelly went into the bathroom and had done a self-portrait in the mirror on the back of a menu and a still life on the back of a menu. And so I had those menus, and I thought, let's put them in, they're part of our history. But then I know Damien Hirst eats in the restaurant all the time and has studios nearby, so I said, Damien, do you want to do them? And he said, yeah, give me some menus. And he did four, and Peter Doig, who eats there a lot, he did three, and then Bryce Marden I ran into, and I told him about it, and he did one. And then, I know, it's just such a joy to have these artists who we love, and we didn't, you know, we only went to the ones who were connected. And then Ed Richey did a menu, and they were just so generous, and it was great.
Just another day at the River Cafe, life. Ruthie,
yeah.
With yeah. all these wonderful artists. How did you get so connected to the art world?
Well, I grew up in Woodstock, and my sister, Susan Elias, is an artist, painter. She's married to a painter, Reinhard Veit. And my father was a great friend of Philip Guston.
A lot
and
of...
So we grew up with Guston, with other artists. My father, you know, bought art. He didn't have a lot of money, but we always had art in the house, paintings. He'd come back with, he'd go drive down to New York and bring back a sculpture. So I grew up with art. And I think artists love to eat, you know, cooks like to, you know, do what they think is their art. So I think it's a big connection.
It's symbiotic. A lot of people are shocked to learn you're American.
Oh, really? Yeah, I am American. I'm 100% American. I've lived in London. I went to London for 6 months in 1968. And then I've been there ever since, you know. So, but I do have, I feel an affinity with Europe, with my children all were born in one in Paris, one in London, one in the other ones, and my stepchildren, three stepchildren in London. So I feel Londoner, I feel European, I feel American.
Let's talk about Rose Gray, your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Rose sadly passed away in 2010, and was such a huge part of this restaurant and what you two built together, and a good friend of yours. For those who didn't know Rose, can you tell us a few things about her?
Well, Rose was, she's a passionate cook, you know. She just always wanted to be known as a, she was a mother, she was an artist, she was a teacher. But, you know, if you asked her, define yourself, Rose, she would say, I'm a chef. And she was just so excited to have this restaurant. And she was a great, you know, she was a force. She was a strong character. She was imposing. She was very tall. She was very beautiful. She had a very focused and clear direction. But there was also an incredible gentleness about her. And she loved to teach. You know, people will talk to you about the way Rose taught them to make a sauce or to make, you know, a cake. She really enjoyed teaching. She really was that person. And we were very, very close. You know, we started together. We were different. I came from upstate New York. She came from the kind of home counties outside of London. But I would say we voted the same. We raised our children in the same way. We loved Italy. And, we worked so well together.
Did you two have conversations about what you would do if you had to carry on the River Cafe without her?
No. I think it was there, but we didn't, you know, I think she was very, she kind of, I don't know, she just very took care of me when she was ill. You know, I used to go and sit with her and be with her, but I know that she once called Richard, who was going on a trip when she was very, very ill, and she said, you know, I really don't think you should go away, Richard. I think you should stay home and take care of Ruthie. Or there was a summer when we were trying to think about the River Cafe, just value, you know, we were working on it, and she said, yeah, you know, I really want to figure this out because something could happen to Ruthie when she goes to Italy for the, you know, this is her 6 months. So I think it was understood, but I think she also always knew that, and I always knew that not for one second would we think about stopping the River Cafe. You know, that was just not the greatest tribute to Rose, was to carry on and make the River Cafe better and better.
Mm-hmm. And how... You know, you and I don't know each other well, but I've had the privilege of seeing you work and seeing you interact with people, and you're so formidable, and you are always
I don't think I am at all.
That's my impression of you, and you really always seem like you're taking care of people all the time, and you see a million things at once, and I feel like you have eyes in the back of your head, you know, and you always know what people seem to need. How did you deal when you lost Rose? I mean, She seems like she was such a great partner to you, and then all of a sudden it was just you.
Yeah, it was a very, I think, it was a slow process, and I think that I was always so worried about whether Rose was afraid. You know, that when somebody is ill, you just don't want them, and you almost more than the pain, you don't want them to have fear. And so I think there was, there was that in her last months, but then, I have to say that when she died, there was one part of me that felt like I was a mother, but I had a single parent, but I had 100 children. And I think that when you want to take, we were all taking care of each other in the River Cafe. You know, I realized that I was always so concerned about people who loved Rose and worked with her and needed her and depended on her. And then they were so worried about me, you know. So we were all kind of somehow taking care of each other. You know, they were taking care of me. I was taking care of them. And then I have to say that I don't know whether there was some kind of agreement going on behind the scenes, but I would look up and there would be Giorgio Locatelli coming in for a coffee. There would be Heston booking a table, you know, wanting to sit near the kitchen. There would, you know, there would be Jeremy King on a Saturday who just happened to stop in. So I think there was a real, you know, there was a very, very supportive and kind and considerate. And I think, you know, I've had two very major losses in my life, and one is Rose, and then a year and a half later it was my son. And I dealt with them both in very different ways. But I think that what takes you through is, you know, the love and support of family and friends.
Mm-hmm. You really are incredible, Ruth. I'm familiar with what you've gone through, and I just find it remarkable how you've carried on and carried so many along with you at the same time.
I'm very lucky. I'm, you know, lucky to have this great group of people, so...
Well, that really shines through in the cookbook, you know, and even at Jubilee, you know, you were one of our keynote speakers and were interviewed by Ruth Reichel, which...
That was so good. You put that together, the two Ruths. It was great. Yeah.
Well, it delighted me to no end to have these two women who I admired so much having a conversation, you know, but you got there and you said, I want to bring Sean on stage and tell everybody who Sean is.
Sean is from the head chef. She was worked in the River Cafe since 2000. I think she said 1999 or something. So she was, you know, she came in and we don't use a lot of the, you know, the head chef terms, the hierarchical terms, but she is, you know, the most. When Rose died, well, first of all, she's an incredible chef. She's a brilliant woman. And when Rose died, I thought, okay, what am I going to do, and how is this going to work? And I asked two managers, Charles Pullen and Vashti Yarmit, and then two chefs, Joseph Trevelli, who also, you know, wrote the cookbook with us, and Sean. And I said, okay, you know, I didn't say it, you're my Rose, but I said, we're in this together, so let's do this together. This is what we're going to do. And very soon after Rose died, someone asked us if we would like to, you know, if we might open a restaurant in their hotel, and I would say, sure, you know, I'll come tomorrow morning and we'll have a meeting with your lawyers. And I just brought four, there were five of us, you know, and everywhere we went, there were five of us. We went to a meeting, if we went to a talk. And I think this kind of really solidified this team of, and we worked together so well, and having two managers and two chefs and me, when there's a crisis or when there's a plan or when there's something exciting, we work across together so well.
Oh, that's
and
wonderful.
And Sean is amazing. And so I was, when I, yeah, so, you know, as I said, it, when Sean sat on stage, she had so much to say when we did Edible, and I was honored. I had to, you know, I just wanted to recognize all the people. It's so collaborative, cooking.
And that's right. You were also honored on Monday night by Edible Schoolyard New York City. They gave you a special award, and you've cooked at that event every single year and helped them raise a lot of money for what's a very fantastic cause.
I think it's great the way all the chefs are there. You know, working in a, running a restaurant is sometimes not the most socially interactive thing for creating a better society. I feel quite happy because I hope that everybody who comes in leaves happier. So maybe I've helped to see people coming in looking really tense because they've been in traffic and they leave feeling better. And I feel that maybe is doing something for the good of the world. But, you know, there isn't, we're involved in many initiatives. But I think Edible Schoolyard is a way for all of us in the food world to say, you know, yeah, we can educate, we can expose, we can create change. And it's all to do with Alice and her vision of so many years ago.
Absolutely. Well, you did make at least me very happy because you served ravioli to our table.
I did like the ravioli.
And I don't, food doesn't necessarily move me to tears all the time, but I was almost weeping because that ravioli was so good. Can you tell us what it was?
Yeah, it was ravioli with ricotta and nettles, and we make it when the very, you know, the very spiky nettles, and it gives it just, well, you can do ravioli with spinach or a green and ricotta, but there is something about the texture of the nettles and the subtlety of the taste, so we did that very simple. We rolled out the pasta super thin, and then thin again. You know, we tried to get it as light, and I hope it was good.
It was like angel ravioli. It was so thin and so light, and it was just in some butter and some grated Parmesan. Cheese. And then you let me take a bottle of olive oil home. I felt like I won the lottery. I got this River Cafe olive oil.
Yeah. No, but that's good olive oil. We go every November to, you know, most of these states that produce wine also make olive oil. So we have a very strong relationship with these estates in Tuscany where we get the oil.
But the best part was you came around with a bowl and said, does anyone want seconds? And I never saw a group of grown-ups raise their hands faster.
Yeah, everybody. Even my friend Victoria, who never has seconds. She had seconds. But I thought it was rather nice that at a, you know, one of those huge dinners that people could have seconds because, you know, it's nice.
Absolutely. Well, crazier. I almost wept with happiness. So
I'll make them for you the next time you come.
So you've had a crazy week. You're in America, in New York, and you've been touring for the book. And I'm sure you are very excited to get back to your home and to the River Cafe.
I am. You know, it has been the most wonderful week because it's been new experiences. I've seen friends I haven't seen for years. I've seen chefs. I've seen artists. We've just had I went to Washington, and we went to the Washington Post, and we went to NPR, and it was great because Sean brought her 10-year-old daughter, and for me that was so nice to take. She'd never been to America before, and so she'd never been to New York. So there was a real excitement at introducing her.
She was adorable. She was at Jubilee, and I got to talk to her for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And she was just this wonderful, charming 10-year-old. And it really was nice just seeing another generation there at Jubilee who maybe will be involved in all of this one day.
It's good to, I mean, so traveling with a kid is always makes things better. It's nice.
Oh, well, Ruthie, thank you for all your time today at Jubilee. Thank you for everything.
I just want to say how much I admire the work you do and the work that Cherry Bomb does. And so it really has been one of the really nice things, getting to know you and the work and the magazine and the festival was so great. It was just a fantastic atmosphere.
Oh, Ruthie, thank you. Well, none of this would exist if it hadn't been for what you and Rose started all those years ago. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ruth. You're the bomb.
You're the bomb. Thank you.
Bye. Be sure to pick up Rose's new cookbook, River Cafe London. It's an essential for any cookbook fan or collector, and I know there are a lot of you out there. And if you are lucky enough to be in London, go visit the River Cafe. All right. Thank you to our engineer, Vitor Hirsch, and the band Tra La La for our theme song. Thank you to Emmy, the maker of beautiful Swiss cheeses, to Bob's Red Mill, the best friend of every baker we know, and Le Cordon Bleu Culinary School for supporting our show. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. You can subscribe to our show wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can subscribe to Cherry Bomb Magazine at cherrybomb.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.